Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Most of us think that new technologies change or disrupt societies, but my guest today says actually societies change for all sorts of reasons and invents technology to facilitate that change. Today we talk about one of the simplest technologies that's been with us for over 2,000 years, but it's also one of our most essential, paper. Mark Kurlansky has written best-selling books on salt and cod and how that preservative and food stock affected the course and nature of human history. His latest book, Paper, Paging Through History, documents how paper facilitated the growth of human civilization as well, and the bigger issue of needing to record information that begat paper. The book begins with cave drawings, the development of papyrus, parchment, and silk as the earliest way of recording information, to paper's invention of the Chinese and Arab societies that first adopted paper, the printing presses that begat literacy around the world, and the future of paper in a digital age. Mark Kurlansky is the best-selling author of over 28 books, a former foreign correspondent for the International Herald Tribune, the Chicago Tribune, and the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Mark Kurlansky, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
You've done a series of books on important common substances that have influenced and affected history, and certainly your latest book, Paper, has done that. What surprised you most as you delved into the history of paper? Because I found a lot of surprises as I was looking through the book.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, to start with, it really changed my whole understanding of the way technology interacts with society. Paper is a technology, an early technology. You know, I came to understand from studying the history of paper that it just really isn't true that technology changes society. The society changes for all kinds of reasons, economic and cultural, and when it changes, it calls up technology to facilitate those changes. Kind of the reverse of the way we usually think about it.
Yeah, I would say that is the case. And I think the normal reaction is to think that, say, the printing press revolutionized the world. Paper revolutionizes the world. The computer revolutionized the world. What
right.
You're saying...
There's actually, in a changing world, these things were needed, and that's why they were developed, which is, you know, why you always see with inventions, there's rarely just one person working on them. I mean, when Gutenberg was working on the printing press, a bunch of people were. And, you know, and when Edison was working on the light bulb, a bunch of people were. And Alexander Graham Bell was not even the first telephone. Because we reach a point in society where we just have this great need, where this is an answer to a problem, and technology comes up with it, which is why... You know, if you don't like what's happening, you can't blame the technology. You know, don't blame your computer. You got to blame the society.
You know, you actually, later in the book, you relate a story that's related in Cervantes' Don Quixote about how after the printing press, a character longs for what he would call the good old days, back before knowledge was freely disseminated. And, of course, the character says, well, we have to burn the books.
Yeah, a priest was consulted about this crazy guy Don Quixote and what to do with him, and you know, they came up with the conclusion he's, you know, one of these modern guys who goes around reading lots of books, and what we have to do is go to his home and burn all his books, and that'll save him.
And it's interesting that maybe around that same time, Spain is conquering the New World, and what of the first thing they do? They burn the libraries and the paper-making production in the New World.
They really do. They burn almost every book of the Aztecs and the Mayans, an incredible loss to history. These were literate people who recorded their history, and we have only a handful of those books left.
Isn't it amazing that it's that same sort of thinking that, you know, we're going to save these people by destroying their culture?
Well, you know, Cervantes was satirizing something that was very real, this reaction to the times. Every time there's a new idea, I mean, when paper was invented and printing and computers, and every time something new happens, there are people ready to say that this is the destruction of civilization and we have to stop this. I mean, it's interesting to go back and look at what Plato had to say about the written word. The written word was fairly new when Plato used it. And although he used it, he denounced it. He was a bit like the people nowadays who write books on computers denouncing computers. You know, he wrote about how the written word was bad for us. So he called it artificial memory. And all this sounds very familiar today. You know, he said that people who just looked up information in books and in writing had no true knowledge. You know, which is what I always think when I'm in a conversation with somebody and they start Googling answers.
Right, exactly. Well, it's interesting that we've always had that reaction. And this is one of the things you relate, that there was some resistance to actually writing things down, because for many cultures, the oral act of remembering, of a memorization, that was very important.
That's how society worked, and it was very disturbing to a lot of people that this change was taking place. And, you know, this distrust of the written word went on for centuries, even in legal circles. You know, today something is considered more valid if you have it in writing. There was a time when it was considered less valid in writing. And, you know, even like Thomas Aquinas in the Middle Ages pointed out that great teachers, he said, Jesus Christ never wrote anything down. And there was this tremendous distrust of writing, because it was thought to impair our memories. Before there was writing, everything was stored in our heads, and it made our brains wonderful, supposedly. And now this was going to make us stupid and not have memories. You know, but you got to look at it this way. People who are illiterate, and there are still some people who are illiterate. I've known people who are illiterate. And one of the characteristics of illiterate people is they have fantastic memories.
It's true.
But nobody argues anymore that you should be illiterate so that you can have a really good memory.
Well, it's interesting. You write in the book that the Muslim Empire in the 600s, 700s, 800s, they totally believed in memorizing the Quran. And it was only after sort of the, I guess, I'm not sure what the legal term was, but they were sort of the lawgivers. They're the guys that did memorize the Quran. They were lost in battle, and the empire feared that there would not be enough of these people to spread the word of the Quran.
Yeah, if they died out, you could lose the Quran if it wasn't written down.
And that was the reason they did it.
However, that being said, it is still believed in Islam that a devout Muslim memorizes the Quran word for word.
Yeah. One of the things that is really interesting is in many ways this book is a history of how we have recorded information, because your book literally begins with cave drawings and then how we wrote on nearly every substance known to man before papyrus, Pergamon, and silk became the preferred instruments prior to the invention of paper. But man wrote on everything, didn't he?
Yeah, rocks, everything. There seems to be an essential urge in human beings to write, to record. I mean, what were these people doing on these cave walls? We don't know. Were they historians recording an incident? Were they religious people? Were they artists expressing something emotional? Because these drawings are beautiful. They're very expressive. We don't know exactly what they were doing, but they were doing something that is universal to human beings, setting something down.
But we find that by 3500 BC, we're starting to write on, in Mesopotamia, on limestone to begin with, and then clay tablets, and then eventually papyrus shows up.
Right, and, you know, papyrus worked pretty well, had some problems, but codexes, which are basically the forerunner of the book, did not work particularly well with papyrus, but papyrus scrolls worked pretty good. The problem was that papyrus is a reed, and the only place, the reed grows all over the Mediterranean, but the only place where it grows in really big, thick reeds that were practical to turn into writing material is in the Nile Delta. So the Egyptians had an absolute monopoly on papyrus, and they really took advantage of it and overcharged for it. So it was an extremely expensive writing material, which is why parchment was invented in Pergamon. Actually, in most languages, parchment is called Pergamon, and it's animal skins, stretched and made very thin. And that was the primary writing material in Europe until about 1,000 years ago.
Yeah. In fact, if you really wanted to save a book, you wrote it on Pergamon rather than paper, even though paper copies survive right next to Pergamon copies about the same ability.
It's always been believed in Europe that parchment preserves better than paper. And, you know, to this day, I mean, British laws are preserved on parchment, and diplomas and degrees are done in parchment, and things that are considered important are done on parchment. I think this idea stems from the fact that before Europeans made paper, Arabs did, and the Arab world used a lot of paper. And they tried to interest Europeans in it, but Europeans weren't very interested because they just didn't use writing enough. I mean, the problem with parchment is that you have to kill hundreds of animals to write something. A few hundred animals for a book. But they didn't do that many books, so it wasn't a problem. But the paper that was made by the Arabs actually didn't last very long in European climate. It was made for a dry climate, and it had a sizing made from grain starch, which tend to rot in a humid climate. Once Europeans started making paper in Italy, they changed the sizing to animal, you know, sort of glue, that stuff you get when you cook down bones, hides. And so, you know, the paper ever since then has been stuff that lasts pretty long. Actually, until the mid-19th century, when they started making it out of wood. Before that, they were making it out of rags, and that rag paper lasts forever.
Right, and that was, I've heard of rag paper, but I never really thought too much about it until this book. And this is what I love about your books is, you know, you think of common objects like salt, you know, people fighting wars over salt centuries ago because that was the way you preserved food, and that was essential to your culture. But the idea of you needed a steady supply of rags to make paper. I always thought of wood pulp, and wood pulp has only been around for the last 150 years. And people who heard us talking about how paper lasts, they think of wood pulp paper that has been acidified, used an acid process. And of course, that is the paper that is disappearing and deteriorating.
Right. But I mean, if you go back and you look at the books that were done 500 years ago, they are in better shape than books from the 1870s because they were rag. Or certain kinds of bark also, like the Japanese used. I mean, the Japanese have records. They have records going back more than 1,000 years that look like they're new. They're absolutely pristine.
Wow. So what do we know about the invention of paper? We know it happened in China.
Yeah, it certainly happened in China. There was paper in China before anywhere else. There was a guy, a eunuch in the Han Dynasty, a Chinese artist I know laughed and said, yes, you know, all Chinese inventions are always attributed to eunuchs. But there was this guy named Cai Lun, who famously invented paper in the first century, and every Chinese school kid learns how Cai Lun invented paper, and his picture is everywhere, even in people's homes. But the problem is that in the early 20th century, archaeologists in China started finding little scraps of paper that predated Cai Lun by 100 or even 200 years, which leaves open the question of who exactly invented it, or it may have been a process. I mean, it's a pretty wild thing to invent, if you think about it. I mean,
right.
It's cellulose fibers, which there's cellulose in most organic things. It's a very common substance. By the way, wood is not particularly rich in cellulose. It's only 50%. Something like cotton is 90%. If you take anything with cellulose in it and you beat it down to the fibers, which is extraordinary to have thought of when you consider the fact that they didn't even know what cellulose was.
Right.
But they got it down to the fibers and diluted it in water, really diluted. It's like 2% fibers. When you look at it, it's just cloudy water. And you pour it through a screen, and the fibers remain, and they land on the screen somewhat randomly and interweave and dry, and it's a sheet that you can pull off. How did anybody think this up?
What was also really amazing about this, as you're relating this story, was that very early, you know, you have these paper documents in which you know, I think there was like a history, and people were asked to add to it, which suggests that the literacy rate in China, 100 BC, 200 BC, right around the beginning of the Common Era, was pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that's why they invented paper. they needed a better writing substance because they were doing so much writing. Their whole language became an art form, which it still is, something like 200,000 characters, and the art of calligraphy is still very appreciated. And unlike the West, art was done, it was done on silk, and then once paper was invented, it was done on paper. And a very bureaucratic form of government, which it still is, that, you know, wants to record everything and document everything, and historians, and they just had a lot of use for the written word, which is what happened across the globe when, you know, centuries later, the Arabs created the society where the written word became very important, and so they adopted paper. And you see this happening everywhere in the world when the need becomes great enough.
My guest today is Mark Kurlansky, the best-selling author of the book Salt and Cod, his latest book, which looks at an important substance that has influenced history, is paper, Paging Through History. It's published by Norton, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, that's one of the interesting things about this book, is you really demonstrate the significance and advanced nature of both Chinese and the Arab and greater Muslim culture, because they were the first people to really adopt paper. China first, you know, around the beginning of the Common Era, the Islamic culture, once it became an empire, they used paper, and they become the first great paper civilizations.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things about looking at paper is that paper really was a mark of advanced civilization. So you see how civilization advanced from Asia to the Arab world, and took a long time before it got to Europe. Europe was a really backward society. I know it's fashionable these days for historians to say that the Dark Ages weren't all that dark, but they weren't all that light either, and they weren't very literate. You know, you see all these things that are sort of contrary to the way we think about them in terms of development, that, you know, Ireland advanced more quickly than England, southern Italy advanced more quickly than northern Italy. And, you know, the Arabs were way ahead of the Christians.
But once paper make, and I assume the printing press changes a lot of that.
Yeah, it does. And there again, it began in China. And movable type was actually invented in China. But movable type is not great for Chinese. If you have 200,000 characters, that's a lot of type. You know, you're much better off with an alphabet with like 25. So they invented it, but they didn't use it much. And what happened in Europe, I mean, the Arabs also didn't use printing much because the nature of their script didn't lend itself particularly well to printing. But European alphabets coming out of the Phoenician alphabet and the Semitic alphabet and the Greek and Roman developed all these block letters, you know, that were just very easy to reproduce, and developed phonetic alphabets. So you didn't, you know, the Chinese has so many characters because a character is an idea, it's not a sound. Whereas Western alphabets that are phonetic, you can say anything with just 25 sounds. And so once printing was invented in the West, it took off in a way it hadn't in other places. It was originally invented probably for the Protestant Reformation, which put out a lot of printed material. It became actually, it was the model for most social and political movements after that, if you're old enough to remember the 60s and mimeograph machines. I mean, the way to get a movement going is to put out all these pamphlets and flyers, and that's how the Reformation worked, and so they needed printing to do that. You know, if Martin Luther wanted to stick something on 1,000 church doors, there was no time to hand write this 1,000 times. Again, it's you know, it's technology being invented out of need. In China, centuries earlier, they invented printing because of Buddhism, because, you know, as I said, a devout Muslim memorizes and a devout Jew reads the books over and over again. But a devout Buddhist is supposed to reproduce the sutras, books of servants of the Buddha. So you reproduce a sutra, and that's a blessing. Hmm. So think how many blessings you can get if you have a printing press.
Right. Well, one of the things you tell all sorts of small stories in there. 1690, America's first newspaper, public occurrences, both foreign and domestic. If you ever took a journalism class, you know this. But what I didn't realize was that in that newspaper, there was a blank page at the end for people to add more news to pass it along. It was the first interactive news publication.
Yeah, I mean, extraordinary to think of. So you read the newspaper, and then you think, well, you know, here's a couple items you guys were missing. So you write them, and you pass the newspaper on to someone else.
Yeah, it was really amazing. There's all sorts of stories like that in the book, Paper, Paging Through History. My guest today is its author, Mark Kurlansky. Well, one of the things I was reading through the book is that I just couldn't help but come up with a correlation that dominance in paper production sort of relates to the overall power and influence of a country. Do you think that's the case?
To a great degree, yeah. I mean, as I was saying before, paper was a marker for the advancement of civilization. Of course, there's other factors have become involved since paper has become highly industrialized. I mean, what happened to rag was that you know, they got so good at producing paper, and society became so literate, there was so much demand for paper, that what was holding them back is they couldn't get enough rags. You know, and they were desperate. Everybody was desperate for rags. The U.S. used to import rags from Italy, and some countries banned the export of rags because they didn't want to contribute to a competing paper industry.
And you think of a rag picker or somebody like that. This was actually a real job where people went around and collected rags so they can go make paper.
Oh yeah, I mean,
it's amazing.
Company that produced the paper for my book, which I have to say is very handsome paper. You know, we had a discussion at Norton about how, you know, a book on paper, we ought to have some really nice paper here. So we did, and got it from a company called Gladfelder. And Gladfelder got started in 1863. It bought a dying paper company at a going out of business sale. And the reason they were going out of business is that they had been caught after the Battle of Gettysburg, which was quite nearby, going with a wagon onto the battlefield and stripping the dead
of
their uniforms and bandages to make paper. And understandably, people didn't want their paper. But this isn't even the first time that happened. It happened in Europe quite a bit during the Napoleonic Wars.
Well,
I mean, people were just desperate for rags. But, you know, what I sort of say is that once it switched to paper, and then countries who had large forests had a distinct advantage. And that's actually when the United States became the world's leading paper maker.
Yeah. And you meant wood pulp, when it switched to wood pulp. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The end of the book, you offer some thoughts on the future of paper in a digital age. There's a lot of people who say, you know, paper's going out of style, but people still love to read books. You talk to a whole variety of people about the future of paper. You feel very good about the future of paper in a digital era?
Yeah, paper is not going away anytime in the foreseeable future. You know, there was a time when they talked about paperless offices, but what they forgot about was the fact that every computer is connected to a printer. People just like some things to be on paper. The thing about technology is that we keep expecting new technology to replace old technology, but you know, most of the time it doesn't. It just creates an alternative. You know, like, think about how well vinyl record sales are doing these days.
That's right. They're coming back.
Yeah, and, you know, television was supposed to eliminate radio.
Right.
And, you know, if you look at e-books, when e-books first came out, I mean, I remember everybody in a panic about how this was, well, either in a panic or not in a panic, but widely believing this was the end of books. And what happened was it grew to a certain extent. You know, my agent used to say, you know, 100% increase in e-books last year. Well, you know, if the year before you sold one and this year you sell two, that's 100%. But it only grew to a certain point, and its market share has not grown in years. And what's happened is, you know, some people like e-books, some people like hard books. Some people like some books in e-books and other books in the hard books, or e-books for when they travel and hard books for when they're home. Kids don't like e-books. All kinds of different things. So it's an alternative. It's created another alternative, and there will be these alternatives. But I was talking to somebody who works in computer encryption, and he was saying that they write their encryption codes on paper. He said, because, you know, they've learned not to trust the electronic records.
Well, and I think it might have been David Remnick or someone who's talking about, you know, okay, newsprint's going down, but personal stationery is going up, because in a ubiquitous world where, you know, emails come in, personal messages come in through email, a personal message written on stationery, it means you're important. You know, I mean, it means more.
Right, right. And it's I think that we are coming close to the day when people are going to start realizing that paper is the most secure communication. You know, you can't hack paper, especially if you burn it when you're through with it. If you saw the movie about Edward Snowden,
right.
In the beginning of the movie, they're sitting together in a hotel room, him and the reporter, and they're trading information on their laptops because they don't trust that the room may be bugged. So they're using highly encrypted messages. And then by the end of the film, they, and this was all true, it was all documented, recorded by camera, they're not trusting the encryption anymore. And what are they doing? They're sitting there writing notes to each other, passing them back and forth on pieces of paper, which then after they look at it, they burn it.
So paper's going nowhere.
No, and you know, and there's all these other uses of paper, too. Like online shopping has made paper packaging go through the roof. And I'm not expecting that anybody's going to come up with a digital alternative to toilet paper.
Well, the name of the book is Paper, Paging Through History. Mark Gerlansky, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, nice talking to you, Rich.
Author Mark Gerlansky speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. His new book is titled Paper, Paging Through History. It's published by Norton. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.